Hello and welcome, Hive Mind. This is Dr. Amy Pike and Dr. Amy Learn, the Amies, and you are listening to the Behavior Buzz podcast, a veterinary behavior podcast that aims to bring cutting-edge scientific information and education to pet parents, behavior professionals, and the veterinary community. Today, we're talking about training methods with Mandy Akins, who is a certified professional dog trainer and newly certified IAABC dog behavior consultant. So join us now to set the record straight on the hottest and most controversial topics. I'm your co-host, Dr. Amy Pike, a board-certified veterinary behaviorist, here with my wonderful partner in crime, the other Dr. Amy.
And I am Dr. Amy Learn, also a board-certified veterinary behaviorist and co-owner of the Animal Behavior Wellness Center with the lovely Dr. Pike here in Virginia. We are coming to you live from the PRN PharmaCal Studios with our executive producer, Taryn Blaze.
Thank you, Amies. On today's episode of The Behavior Buzz, we will be discussing crossover training. And we have an amazing guest, Mandy Akins. But before we get started, what's getting the Amies buzzed during today's episode?
So I just got back from a trip to Turkey, which was freaking amazing. And I brought back some Turkish tea. So I made tea right before recording. And let's just say it was a hot mess because I'm used to tea bags here in the States. And it was all loose leaf tea. And so it's like all over my kitchen right now. So.
And then when you're done, you can read the tea leaves and see what your fortune says.
Yeah, exactly what my fortune is.
That's right. See if today's going to go well for you or not. I changed things up today, too, and I made a warm drink because it's a cool early fall day. I made chai tea with some rum chata in it, of course, to sip on. You can find all of our signature cocktail and mocktail recipes on our website, behaviorbuzz.com. That's Behavior Buzz with six Z's because we're amazing.
And what is our guest imbibing today, Mandy?
You all are wild. I can't pronounce it. I'm going to say it's a La Douleur Esquisse.
It's always better. It so really fancy. Means a good quality if you can't pronounce it.
It's a 2020 Pinot Noir.
There we go. Good girl.
Delightful.
Yep. And I love drinking
Pinot Noir
right out of the bottle, and I will not be judged.
Because we are sophisticated here on the Behavior Bus.
I love it. Oh my goodness. Straight out of the bottle. All right, Behavior Buzz fans, what's all the buzz about today, besides drinking straight out of the bottle? Our guest today has been working with dogs for 25 plus years. It all started with a pet Jack Russell named Scooter that she got at 5 weeks old. And yes, I said that right. She started her dog professional life as an assistant in a veterinary clinic where a coworker got her involved in search and rescue. That led her to get a duck tolling retriever, Annie. She soon left search and rescue work because, you know, spiders, snakes, peeing in the woods. I am right there with you, girl. And moved quickly into the dog sports world. She has titled dogs in confirmation, including at Westminster, agility, fieldwork, obedience, rally, and most recently, duck diving. She became a professional trainer 10 years ago and became a full-time trainer a couple years later. Her professional training career led her to working with Mua when I lived in Kentucky. She now has a brick and mortar training, daycare, and enrichment center and has raised 3 certified trainers herself. Mandy, we're excited to have you here today.
Welcome, Mandy.
Oh, thank you. Hi.
We are. When you said Mua, I was like, who's Mua? Who's Mua?
Mua.
Who is she working with? I don't know what's happening.
Mua.
Mua. Me, you.
I'm trying to class it up, you know?
Yeah, with the wine, we need some more class.
I know.
Well, should we dive right in and see what's happening?
Let's do it. I did have to laugh, though, the born-again trainer. I feel like I need a priest or a preacher.
Yes, we do.
Which we
we're going to be offering absolution today at the end of this.
We might need it. Yeah. That's what it is.
With your communion wine.
Oh, goodness.
So when did you know you wanted to be a dog trainer?
I didn't. That there's no epiphany here. There's no like rainbows and butterflies and none of that happened. I worked at a university and our program was constantly being threatened because of budget, and I needed money. And I had all this experience in dog sports, and I did have people start inquiring here and there to help with their dogs. And so I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And it just absolutely snowballed. I was at a place where I was able to do it. My husband, Michael, bless his heart, he said, if it'll make you happy, do it. And so I did. And I actually, Dr. Pike may remember the day that I called her.
Was it a cold call? Hold on, let's get to the...
Yeah, kind of.
It was like, a cold call.
I had met her at a meet and greet. Like, she had invited trainers to come in and meet her. And we chit-chatted, and she kind of put the invitation out. She said, hey, if you ever want to come work in a behavior clinic, let me know. And I was like, no, I got a full-time job at a university. I got, like... Yeah, I got retirement.
She's too fancy.
I got benefits. And I think it was like 3 weeks later, I called her and I was like, so I just quit my job.
You're a siren. You lure all of the unsuspecting people to you.
Yeah. I lure everyone in.
So, there we are. That's how that happens.
Love it. I love it.
It is.
The rest is history. So, Mandy, one of my sort of favorite pat myself on the back moments that I've had as a VB was when I convinced a trainer over lunch one day to actually cross over. Can you explain what it means to be a crossover trainer?
I actually hate that term. I'm going to be honest.
I love it.
I do, because I don't, you're not, it's not like some Girl Scout ceremony or, you know, I mean, it's... I think you just learn through education, right? Like, at least you should be learning through education. So if you are doing continuing education and staying up on what's happening in the field, like, your training should naturally, through attrition, change. And so I think a lot of trainers have used aversive methods, punitive methods, whatever you want to call it. The labels drive me nuts because every month it seems like it's changing. But again, I think it's just education. And I, it was over a period of time. It started in dog sports. Field training is very aversive. And I think we're going to maybe get into that here in a little bit. But a lot of aversive methods in that field, no pun intended. And that one I'm still struggling with a little bit, but agility is where I kind of was like, oh, clicker training, interesting. And saw some different things, and then it just kind of opened the door. And one of our local trainers here had a seminar with a lady named Chris Bach, and she actually had tollers, which at that time, nobody else had tollers. Like, you never did see them. And so I went, and she was talking a lot about clicker training and using counter conditioning, desensitization, all those things. It just kind of opened the door, and it just gradually over the years has evolved. And yeah, now here I am. I don't use training tools in my training.
I love it. I love it.
Fascinating. So this is not so much a light bulb moment. It's a I'm learning as I go moment. And do you feel like that is similar to other professions? Is that what we all do as we grow and evolve?
I think you should. I mean, I would hope to God my dentist is not like pulling teeth the way they did 30, 40 years ago. Come on. I mean, my husband's a building inspector, and he has to go every year to continuing education because building houses changes, materials change, what we know about structure and weather and all these things change. So every other profession goes through this, but I don't know why dog training or animal training in general doesn't. It just stays stagnant. And we go, oh, well, that's how we've always done it. Well, That just doesn't make sense.
But that
to
doesn't
me.
Make it right.
Exactly.
Yeah, let's move on with the time.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense. Like to say you've always done it that way just doesn't make sense. You know, like I always had a checkbook for years and years and years. I don't have that anymore. You know, like everything evolves.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm hoping. I think there's starting to be a shift in training, but it's still slow. And it's a battle, and I get tired of, well, that it's always worked, and that's how we do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. I was not a gradual crossover, so I am a crossover trainer myself, but I did have a light bulb moment that many of you don't know about. So for those of you who don't know about it, I was active duty military. I was a veterinarian in the Army, and one of our military working dogs, who ironically was named Pike, he was doing a demonstration at the local elementary school with the dog handlers, and he had gone after one of the handlers on the bite wrap, and he wouldn't out, which means release the bite wrap. And so the kennel master, who was in charge of the entire kennel and all the training for that kennel, thought it would be a brilliant idea that while the dog wouldn't out, no matter how hard he was pulling on the prong collar. So he wrapped a leash around the dog's waist and he yanked as hard as he could, and he ended up rupturing the dog's bladder, and the dog also ended up rupturing two cervical discs at the same time. And unfortunately, he did end up passing away because he went septic from his ruptured bladder. So unfortunately, that was a very, very big moment in my life where I was like, there has to be a better way to train dogs. So obviously that is like the worst of the worst. But Mandy, has there been anything that you've seen or done, you know, yourself in the name of training?
There's so many. I'm not shocked. I mean, I used to be like, oh, I'm not going to say anything because I don't, you know, people are going to think that. I just don't care anymore. Like, I really it. Don't. That's how people learn, right? Hopefully. I mean, there's been a couple situations. The first training class I took with my little Jack Russell, who was, yes, 5 weeks old. I didn't know any better. It was choke collars, choke chains. And we were to, you know, when we were telling the dog to down, jerk on the chain to make the dog lay down. He weighed 12 pounds. He was a little guy. And I did that two or three times, and then he started to bite me. And I was like, oh, okay. And the trainer said, don't let him get away with that. Grab him by the side of his face, pick him up, shake him, tell him no, and then make him lay down. And I did it. And he bit me harder.
Like a good Jack Russell kid.
And I went, okay, this isn't how we're supposed to do this. And I actually, that didn't set right with me. The moment, though, that I really was like, aversives, I can't do it anymore, was my last dog, Roxy, that I was training in the field. She, unfortunately, she's gone now, but super sweet dog, super sensitive dog, and I put her up on what we call force fetch table, and it sounds just as awful, or it is just as awful as it sounds, and I went to pinch her ear, and she just looked at me like, why? Like that, if the dog could have said, why are you doing this? It was just, I literally was like, I don't know. I'm so sorry. And I stopped and I put her on the floor and I said to my husband, I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I don't like it. I can't. And so that was kind of the end for me. And I haven't done field work since then because it's left such a bad taste in my mouth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's sad. Yeah. I do find that like field work is probably one of the remaining strongholds in terms of like the training field too, as far as kind of the punishment stuff. Would you agree?
I would. And it's one of those that I grapple with because we do have field dogs. My husband hunts with our dogs and he does not use collars anymore. But there's also a sense of like, there's no lifeline out there. Mm-hmm. The worst part for me is the actual fetching part where they're teaching the dog to fetch. Force fetch, for those of you that have never heard of it or don't know what it is, it's an ear pinch typically. Sometimes they'll do a toe pinch where they actually pinch hard enough that the dog will yelp or whine or cry or open their mouth. And when they do, they put the bumper or the bird or whatever in their mouth and then they release the pressure. So pressure on, pressure off. And then some dogs are very stoic about it. Our dog Jonas, when we were force fetching him, an ear pinch didn't bother him at all. So they took a bottle cap and put a bottle cap on their thumb and pinched with the metal jagged edge of a bottle cap.
Oh God.
That didn't bother him. And so the field trainer actually reached down and bit his ear.
Oh my God.
Yeah. To get him to open his mouth. And he did. And that's, you know, and the trainer, when I'm sitting there, he's like, oh, this is a tough dog. This dog's going to be great in the field. And, you know, nothing bothers him. And I'm like, this is bad.
Mm-hmm. It's just yucky.
And it just goes up from there. So then it goes from the physical with the pinching to actual e-collar. And so they'll just keep ramping up the level on the collar until the dog yipes. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, the dogs learn very quick, keep something in your mouth. So you avoid the pain. Yeah. I mean, that's all they're doing. Mm-hmm. I guess the least offensive side of it is the recall side of it for me. Because they're like, when the dogs are in the water, when they're out in the woods, when they're, you know, 400, 500, 600 yards from you down in the weeds, they don't hear you and the wind travels and that sort of thing. So I get it. Why there's still use of collars in field work. I don't know what the answer is. I don't even pretend to know what the answer is. Because of that, I had to step away and just go, I can't do it anymore. My husband chooses to hunt close. He doesn't do a lot of open field work. He stays pretty tight with the dog. So we don't need that collar.
Is anyone using like a voice activated collar where they can just literally communicate with the dog?
I've heard of a couple people doing that. And I don't know how effective it is. I mean, there's a lot of people that have tried to dive into positive field training and it's just not sticking. And I don't know what the answer is to it. I think you can accomplish quite a bit without using aversives, and natural drive and natural ability really takes you a long way. And so I think that's one of the things you have to consider if you're going to get, it doesn't matter what it is, field work, agility, obedience, pet dog, doesn't matter. You need a dog that fits the job. And that's one of the things I think we're missing with some of these dogs that pet owners, especially that they feel like they got to resort to collars or prongs or whatever. That dog's not meant for that job of being a pet.
Yeah, amen.
So we had a recent episode on learning theory and kind of what behavior is and how do we get behavior. And we always like to talk about Lima, the standards of training. And what does that term mean to you? You know, how do you describe that?
I always think of a lima bean every time somebody says it. I do, and I hate lima beans. No. Lima, however you want to pronounce it, is, to me, it's just, it's a way to approach things common sense, right? Like, I don't need a jackhammer to put a nail in my wall.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to start there. I'm going to start with, you know, I might be able to use like my AirPod case if it's a soft wall, right? And then I gradually move up into the point where maybe I need, you know, a hammer, or I need a bigger hammer, or I need to go get Mike because I don't have the strength and I'm trying to go through a wall stud. So I think, yeah, that's kind of how I describe it to owners, is we're going to start with as little effort as we need, not only just because I'm cognizant of the dog and their emotions, but I'm also freaking lazy when it comes to dog training. I'm so lazy. And so I'm going to try to get by with the least amount of effort that I've got to do, which to me,
as are the owners.
Yeah. So least amount of effort is to me the least intrusive. typically.
Amen.
So, but not always,
right? Does that answer that question?
It does, but then that brings me to the next question, right? Because if we want an easy way out and we want to get something done, shouldn't we just pick up one of those aversive tools because they work fast? And, you know, how does the use of tools fall into that Lima hierarchy of how we move up that ladder?
Yeah, so I'm going to go back to like the nail in the wall analogy, metaphor, analogy. I wasn't good at.
I don't know what it is.
That was not my strong.
This is not an English class. This is about behavior. Yeah.
So, okay.
Thank God.
Right? So, okay, if I take a hammer and put the nail in the wall, or, and that got the job done, and I'm like, no, I want to get this done faster, so I'm going to go grab the sledgehammer to get this nail in the wall. I've made potentially a bigger hole in my wall than I needed, and now I got to go back and fix that bigger hole, where if I had just used the smaller thing first, I don't have as much to fix later.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things with aversives, is you potentially are creating a whole lot more things that you got to fix that you never intended to fix.
Yeah, like now you've used your sledgehammer and you've broken the water main and you have a flood.
Yeah.
Or like there are...
Yeah.
Negative consequences potentially to all of the tools that you choose, and you want to make sure you have the fewest consequences and the best outcome.
Right. So, and that goes back to I'm really lazy as a dog trainer, and I don't want to have to fix things that weren't broken. So that's one of the things I've learned with tools is I see some of the fallout that comes from those methods, and it's not even just tools. There's also psychological and other aspects. Starvation, you know, I see a lot of trainers doing that where they'll take dogs in for board and train and they won't feed them for 3 days to try to get them motivated to work. And you're creating something else. You might be creating a health issue. You might be creating resource guarding. You might be creating bad habits in eating and all of those things. So you just really have to know what your fallout is. And I don't think the general public and most trainers that are using those tools, I don't even think they realize what the fallout is potentially going to be.
Yeah.
And they always blame it on the owner. Mm-hmm. Well, you didn't do it right.
I hear that too all the time.
And you know, there are a lot of important little details involved in training and timing and how you set your criteria. And so any tool that we're talking about, it could be that the owners don't really understand what those tools are for or how to use them correctly. And you know, that's part of training too, is talking about how to teach the owners.
That's who I work with 99% of the time. I mean, the dogs are such a small part of this whole equation. It's the owners. It is the owners. Yeah. And I see some nuts, man. There's some crazy, and I'm not talking in like my business part. I mean, I do, but like in the world, right? Like you think about just the general population, and you're going to trust them with something like a prong collar or a shock collar.
So true.
Would they have to be warned not to eat detergent? Mm-hmm. Like, come on.
That's so true.
You can't. So true. You cannot trust the general public. And could I use an e-collar effectively? Absolutely. Absolutely, I could. I have no doubt in my mind I could. But I also am really good at knowing when to stop, knowing when I'm over threshold, knowing when that dog is having an issue, when they're okay. Like, I feel pretty confident about those things, but I don't feel confident in teaching other people about those things.
Yeah, I think that like ties into one of my most favorite quotes in the universe from Ian Dunbar that said, to use shock as an effective dog training method, you need a thorough understanding of canine behavior, a thorough understanding of learning theory, impeccable timing, and if you have all three of those things, you will never need to use a shock collar to train an animal. And so people that don't have those things are using those tools and not effectively because they don't need to use them. Yeah.
They don't know.
They don't know anybody.
Yeah.
I agree.
Thank you so much for all of your candid words, and we really appreciate those analogies as well. Mandy, what's up next, Dr. Pike?
We're going to first learn what an analogy versus a metaphor is. And then, we're going to take a quick break with a word from our sponsors.
PRN stands for Pro Re Nata, a Latin phrase meaning as the circumstance arises. Since 1978, the veterinary community has trusted PRN Pharmacal to be here when needed, with industry-leading research and innovative products designed to improve animal health and quality of life.
PRN Pharmacal is a proud sponsor of the Behavior Buzz podcast and is committed to the physical and emotional health of animals everywhere. PRN Pharmacal, here when you need us.
All right, let's get down to business. So before we dive back into the controversy, let's get to know Mandy a little bit more. We know that you love your Ductoline retrievers, but do you have another favorite breed to own or work with?
So this is going to probably be shocking to some people. I absolutely freaking love a Boston Terrier. They're amazing.
They're so cute.
They are, and I'm telling you what, they're smart. I'm on my second Boston now. The first one was by accident that I got her. She actually was the dog that took me to Westminster. Her name was Edith.
Edith.
I loved Edith.
So did I.
She was perfect. And that dog did everything. She would swim. She would fetch. She did scent work. Like, I did everything with her. And just an overall good dog. Never had an issue. And I lost her a couple years ago and didn't ever think I would get another one. And I actually found myself really, I missed it. And so I got a new one. Her name is Tootie. And Tootie is fantastic. She is the same. Like, and it's from a different breeder, similar lines, but different breeder. And yeah, I think they're great little family dogs. They're cool. And I think they fly under the radar. People forget about them.
Probably a good thing.
It's
a good thing. when they forget about the breed, it's not overbred.
I will tell you, I dreamed of a Malinois. I wanted a Malinois for years and years and years. And now I have a Malinois Border Collie cross named Steve. He'll be my last. I'm good. Yeah. I'm good on that.
Fill that need right up.
Yeah. Steve is special.
Steve is something else. Steve was raised by Tollers, but he is all Mal and all Border Collie on the worst side of both. Yeah, so he's taught me a lot. To my knowledge, he's the only one in his litter that's not been trained on any tool, like a e-collar or prong. And I got through some reactivity with him that way. He's done really well. So it can be done.
Didn't he just get a dock diving award?
He did. He is the third place finisher overall in his division for air retrieve, or it's called Eclipse through IDS, International Dog Sports. And then I also found out this past weekend he is now a Horizon champion, which is a distance champion. So his biggest is 26 feet.
Nice.
So yeah. And this is a dog that I used to not be able to take out because he would scream, bark, lunge, and then turn around and bite me. And now we go to duck diving competitions, and he's doing great.
Nice. Congratulations.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And enough Thank of this you. Warm and fuzzy. Let's get back to the controversy.
Let's do it.
I need to know some more stuff. All right. So tell me what you feel aversive means, and why do you think aversive training methods are considered so sexy and popular for the owners that use them?
Aversive is, I think, well, we know. Aversive depends on the person, the thing that you're using it on, right? So what's aversive to me may not be aversive to you. What's aversive to Steve may not be aversive to my tollers, vice versa. Aversive to me is just a dog or being saying, nope, I don't want that. No bueno. Get it away, right? I feel like it's getting worse instead of better with social media. The clicks and the likes and the people that have all the followers and whatever they're using and being successful with is obviously what you need to be successful, right? So you watch, you know, whatever trainer or person, and that's what they're doing. So that's what you do. And we see that, you know, their television trainers are kind of going away, I think, because there's not most people aren't watching things on TV anymore. But, you know, we had that whole calm, submissive, you just got to, you know, run them for 5 miles and that will be what makes them a good dog. And that's not what training is. But everybody did it, right? Everybody thought it was all about whispering And it's not about whispering at all.
It's about pshht.
Yeah, whispering sounds so gentle.
Right?
It's not at all what it was.
It's more like a rattlesnake. Yeah. So I think the aversives are, number one, I'm actually like in some marketing groups kind of incognito, which now if they're listening to this, they'll know.
Cover's blown.
Anna. Because I'm really truly interested in why people are drawn to these methods and these trainers, like, because they do really well, right? You pay an exorbitant amount of money. I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars to work with these people. And it must be okay, right? Like, if I'm spending $3,800, $4,500 to have somebody train my dog, they must know what they're doing and it must be effective. And so, and then it becomes like almost like a status symbol. Oh, I worked with this trainer and I spent this amount of money on my dog. Mm-hmm. And this is all like my hypothesis. I have no data by this. This is what I'm thinking in my head as I watch this stuff. And so I think that's why it's sexy. Is because it looks like it's a status symbol that you can spend that much money to have your dog trained.
It's the Peloton effect. Yeah. You guys know that story about Peloton?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Did you like pay more money and you get better things?
Did you see recently there was a video that was going around about they put up like a mock shoe store? And it was like all fancy and like the glass cases and the lights and all this stuff. And they invited all of these fashion influencers in. And all of these fashion influencers are going, oh, all about these shoes and how great it is. And oh, the quality. Every single shoe in there was from Payless.
Yes.
And they told them afterwards.
That's awesome. Yes.
That's
amazing.
Yeah. So I really think it's. Sensationalism is definitely really what it's about, you know.
And the mob mentality.
Yeah, mob mentality, 100%. You know, if somebody's got you know, a million followers, they must be quote unquote doing something right, even if it's wrong.
Well, talk about a little bit about the demographic of most aversive trainers. I don't want to pick on anyone, but I think it should be talked about.
So I've been hesitant. Like, I really haven't discussed with anybody, I don't think, this, my theory. I think there's something to it. Is most of the aversive trainers that you see are military, ex-military, ex-police force, something along those lines. And as a society, we are taught to respect those positions, right? Like those positions should be respected. They are positions of authority. You should hold them in a higher regard. And so it's really hard to change your mindset. It's also typically men that are in these positions and very egotistical in my opinion. It's going to get me in trouble. That's fine. I'm used to it. For me, that's not a turn on at all. Like, I don't like that type of personality. I don't like somebody who wants to flaunt themselves and show how great they are and pound their chest. That's not a turn on to me in any way, shape or form. But some people are really drawn into that and they like that. They like that that persona. So I think they go into that. And one of the things we do know in dog training is most of it is women.
In the positive side.
Yeah, in the positive side is women. But even all around, like, you look at most of your dog trainers, they're women. And there's only a few men. And those men are usually have a staff of a lot of women. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, so there's that demographic side of it. I mean, they're not all that way. I mean, you can't encompass everybody, but I see the majority of it. I see it a lot in my area. And when I say my area, within 300 miles, right?
Yeah. We see it here too.
And I also, like I said, I'm in some of these marketing groups and I'm listening and reading what these people are saying about positive dog trainers and about image. They talk about body image. Like, that's one of the threads I saw recently was talking about people's weight and that you can't be respected if you're overweight. And I'm like, okay.
I know.
So they were talking about weight and how you look and how you dress. And that's one of their marketing ploys, actually, is to put your better looking people forward facing, which is just baffling to me. And it's all about the fancy car. Like, don't, you know, like pull up in a beat up car. You need to have a fancy car and it needs to be wrapped. And it is all about image with that demographic of trainer. It was very eye opening.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it was very eye opening. I would like to see more people study that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, need a psychology study on
Yeah.
that. All right. Well, Mandy, how do you feel about regulating the dog training industry and outlawing certain tools and techniques? Do you think that that will advance our industry or will it somehow backfire on us?
Regulators! Mount up!
Mount up!
To show my age. Regulate us, please. I would love regulation in dog training. I am not opposed to it at all. I think the ones that are opposed to it are scared that they won't be able to make the cut. And I am not going to go as far as to say ban or outlaw tools. I don't think that ever works for anything. Alcohol didn't work. Prohibition, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not on that side of it. What I think regulation should be about is consumer protection. So, you know, if I go get my hair cut, and they do a really bad job, I can report them to that governing body. And if enough people report them, they're going to lose their license. Mm-hmm. And then I, as a consumer, can make a decision. Do I want a licensed hairstylist or do I want an unlicensed hairstylist? That's up to me. I can make that choice and then I got to live with that choice. Right. But mm-hmm. for the consumer right now, they don't have any way to understand who is legit, who is not, who's been training for 2 weeks, who's been training for 20 years. They don't, there's nothing out there other than somebody's throwing up a shingle and says, I'm a dog trainer.
Right.
There was a German Shepherd situation out in California with a trainer where they sent the dog to the trainer. They couldn't get any communication. They went to finally go get the dog and she gave them a different German Shepherd.
Oh my gosh.
What? Because the other German Shepherd had died.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
And they figured it out. Ugh. She packed up. She's in Connecticut now. And somebody just reported her because they couldn't get their French Bulldog back. It's the same trainer.
Oh, my God.
The authorities Jesus. Found the French Bulldog in the woods behind her house. Emaciated and nothing in his stomach.
Oh, my God.
That's terrible.
Oh, my God.
So
isn't it sad that like we regulate hairdressers, but we don't regulate dog training?
Yes, I don't understand it. And so this person literally packed up shop on one coast and went to the other coast and there is zero ramifications for it. She has no mark on her record. Like you would really have to dig to find that. And most people aren't going to take the time to do that. Right.
Right. Right.
So that's where I think regulation is not about regulating how people train. Because there are some things that I potentially do that somebody else is going to find aversive. It goes back to that what's aversive to one person is not another. But there's probably certain things that I do in my training that somebody else doesn't like and vice versa. But at the end of the day, if we're following the guidelines that are set by the licensing, whoever, we can add our own little flair here and there. And then if there's a problem, a client should be able to go report me and it be investigated. I mean, that's really, to me, what regulation is about. It's about consumer protection. It's not about us as trainers.
I hear you. And, you know, that brings us back to some of these viral videos of dog trainers, air quotes here, choking and hanging dogs in the name of training. I'm going to teach you a lesson. I'm going to make sure you don't do that again. Tell me your thoughts when you see these videos and learn about those kinds of treatments.
There, I guess the most recent one that I've seen, I'll be honest and say, I try to stay off of that aspect of social media because it
definitely
it does mess with my head
for sure.
A little bit. Yeah. Like it's, I just don't think it's,
she just watches TikTok, videos with like chickens dancing.
I love me a good TikTok, man.
Cats pushing things off of tables.
That's how Mandy and I communicate these days, is we just said TikTok to each other.
Yeah, that will dictate our mood, tell you where we're at mentally. TikToks are my love language right now. Yeah, I try to avoid it, but there's this trainer right now that he looks like something off of like Wish. A Wish Jersey Shore.
Oh my God.
Dude.
that's a great
all about
way
the ego.
I'm describing it.
The like Wish version of a Guido. I don't know. I can't figure it out. But anyway, it's all very, again, sensational. And it's like there's explosive and there's all this fighting and the dog and this and that. And, you know, is he going to get bit? I really think that's what it is people just want to see if he's going to get bit, right? Mm-hmm. And he has to strangle those dogs so he doesn't get bit. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if he didn't have those dogs strung up, he'd be in pieces. That man would be in pieces. Society likes that stuff, man. They like it. You know, that's why they go see the movies that something's being blown up every 20 seconds. That's why they like true crime. That's why they like that stuff, because it's sensational. But I think there's a disconnect between reality and Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And when I say Hollywood, like social media kind of is filling that niche of Hollywood now. Right. Yes, it's reality, but it's also extremely edited reality. And at the end of the day, there is an animal being hurt, period. That animal is experiencing pain and discomfort and psychological distress. And I don't think people realize that when they're watching that. They're more focused on him or the trainer and not the dog. But if you really watch those dogs, it's terrifying.
It's awful.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's awful.
And if you have to hide your locations on where you're going to be in fear of authority, that's all you need to know. It's not because, like, it's not the Taylor Swift thing. Like, you don't need to hide your location because everybody loves you and wants to be around you. You're hiding your location because you're potentially going to get arrested for what you're doing, depending on where you are. And again, it goes back into that demographic. It's the fancy clothes, the fancy car. They're in the big cities, right? The fancy cities, New York, Miami, Chicago, LA. Mm-hmm. All of those are very personified images. It doesn't appeal to me at all. I can't imagine a point in my life where it would have appealed to me. But I think for some, it is very telling. They're like, oh, look at this. Mm-hmm. And this dog is then like shut down, right? It's just laying there because it can't breathe and it's exhausted. And then, you know, the tagline is, you know, another one saved, because somehow death is worse than what that dog just endured. And that's not the case. And we all know, like, nobody does a follow-up. Where are these dogs a year later? Where are these dogs 6 months later?
Yeah, exactly.
You never see that, ever, ever. And I guarantee you it's because non-disclosure agreements are signed. There's all kinds of stuff behind the scenes that nobody knows about. But the reality is we all know that those dogs aren't fixed.
Right.
They're exhausted in that moment. They're shut down in that moment. But let's reevaluate that in 3 to 6 months and see what's happening.
Right.
So,
and they're worse off.
Yeah, they really are.
Worse off.
Yeah.
So it has been so fun having you here. I miss you like freaking crazy. So what is one thing you want to have the hive mind take away from today's episode?
Don't be afraid of your mistakes that you've made in training or that you will make in training. I still make them. And you learn from those mistakes and you do the best with what you have in the situation that you have. And follow your path. Just stop worrying about what everybody else is doing. Just do you. And if it feels right to you, you're okay.
Excellent job.
And that brings us to our buzzworthy or buzzkill segment. So we end each show with our buzzkill segment, in which we allow our guests, that's you, Mandy, to bring up some special story, controversies, or the weirdest thing a client or patient ever did or said. Then the hive mind, that's our audience, will vote. Is it buzzworthy?
Winning.
Or buzzkill.
The weirdest thing that ever happened to me was I had a client that came to me. This was the entire purpose of scheduling a session, was to teach the dog how not to pee in the bed after the owners had sex.
Oh, awkward.
Embarrassing.
That's it. It's everything. It's all I got, folks.
Did you succeed? Did it work?
I did not.
It's called a baby gate.
Did not ask for video or follow-up.
Nope.
told them to shut the door. Shut the door, change your sheets, take a shower. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know.
There's some management strategies.
So much to unpack.
It's a lot, and I don't want to talk about it anymore.
All right, well, here at the Behavior Buzz, we know you're all busy bees who live and die by the science like we do, so we'll put up the references from today's show on the website, so buzz on over to the Honeypot page to find those. We'll be sure to put Mandy's website and information on there for you, in addition to some resources on Lima force-free training, and we're going to include the statement that the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists recently put out against training like the Dog Daddy is doing.
And we just want to say a big thank you to our guest today, Mandy. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mandy, you're amazing.
Thanks.
I appreciate everything that you said today.
Thank you also to our premium sponsors, PRN, PharmaCal, and Nestle Purina Pet Care.
And an even bigger thank you to our hive mind. Without listeners like you, we would have nothing to buzz on about. So grab a cocktail or mocktail and join us next time for Cocktails and Conversations.
Follow Behavior Buzz on Facebook. You know how to spell it.
And on Instagram at Behavior Buzz.
And on our website, behaviorbuzz.com.
Be positive.
Be informed.
Now buzz off.
Thank you to our sponsor, Milena DeMartini Incorporated, founder of the Separation Anxiety Certification Program for Dog Professionals and creator of the Mission Possible online course for guardians. Milena and her team of certified separation anxiety trainers work remotely with clients whose dogs are suffering from separation anxiety. Whether you are a dog owner or a dog professional, find the perfect resources to start your separation anxiety journey at MilenaDeMartini.com.
Thank you to our premium sponsor, PRN PharmaCal, the makers of Reconcile. Reconcile is an FDA-approved drug for the treatment of canine separation anxiety in conjunction with a behavior modification plan. PRN PharmaCal is committed to meeting the evolving needs of modern veterinary medicine and dedicated to developing products to strengthen the bond between pets and their people.
This episode is made possible by our premium sponsor, Nestle Purina ProPlan Veterinary Diets and Supplements. Ask your veterinarian if Purina Pro Plan veterinary diets and supplements are right for your pets.
While the Behavior Buzz podcast provides clinical insight into veterinary medicine and veterinary behavior, these statements are not intended to diagnose or treat a particular patient. If you have concerns about your pet, please contact your veterinarian or your nearest veterinary behaviorist.